As I said, today we are thinking about spiritual well-being. And don't worry, David, we didn't need that quite yet. Thanks, I'll let you know, Bab. So I just wondered if you can think for a moment, when you hear the word spiritual, think about our spirit, how would you describe it? So think for a moment about the word. We use the word spiritual, but I think it's quite a difficult, it's kind of, we know what it means, but maybe quite a difficult word to articulate. So just think for a moment, what do you think of when you hear the word spiritual, as you think about your spiritual well-being? Well, in Thessalonians, Paul speaks about it going well with our spirit and our soul and our body. So our spirit is very much part of us that's not kind of flesh or blood. It's not tied to our emotions so much or our mind, and it's kind of there. Paul speaks about it being different from our soul, that sense of our spirit and our soul being different. Well, many of us might describe it's our spirit that's the part of us that connects with God. But actually, even people who have got no faith might recognize that ultimately we are spiritual beings. There's a spiritual dimension to each one of us. So what does spiritual well-being look like? And how do we go about increasing our spiritual well-being and cultivating it? Well, first of all, there's that foundational step that if we are to be truly spiritually healthy and have that vitality, it's that sense of inviting God to fill us with his spirit, to fill us with his heart and his presence in our lives. The Bible is really clear. Throughout the story of the Bible is that God knows us and he loves us and wants to know us more. Actually, as part of the story that Elijah's story that Chris read just now, in order to encounter God, Elijah had to go on a physical journey. He had to journey for 40 days to Mount Horeb. And whilst that mountain may not connect with us very much, it would have connected with Elijah because Elijah would have remembered that was the same mountain, Mount Sinai, it was the same mountain where God, Moses and the Israelites encountered God on that mountain. So Elijah would have had some sense that, that in that place he was journeying to encounter God. But of course, if we want to encounter God, we don't have to go on a physical journey, you might be pleased to know. Because we live this side of the cross and Jesus' resurrection and Pentecost, actually we can know God, we can encounter God in the midst of our busy lives inside of us, right where we are now. We can know and experience God's love and his peace and his joy and his comfort. That sense of anchoring, that hope that anchors our lives, even in the midst of the storms. We thought about the lighthouse earlier on, of those storms of life. Actually, even in the midst of that, we've got God within us if we've invited his spirit to live in us. God's not just out there, but actually he's within us 24/7. It was St. Augustine who said, "Our hearts are restless until we find our rest in God." Fantastic image, until we find our rest in God. You know, outwardly we may look okay, but inwardly often we know that there are things within us that aren't right. There's something missing, even if we can't always identify, even if people can't identify it. Our spirit is the part of us that only God can satisfy. I want to say that we are designed, God designed us to be spiritually well daily. That's his design and desire for us. And actually, it's that sense of our spirit connecting with God's spirit, the kind of connecting together as we live and grow together in the way that we were designed to be. So maybe the one thing that we don't just take from today, but from this series, is to invite God's Spirit into our lives, to make that life-changing decision, to invite Jesus into our lives and to allow our lives to be filled with his Holy Spirit. But actually, I want to say that that is just the start of this spiritual journey of well-being. Maybe you've invited Jesus into your life a long time ago or recently or even just now. But I want to say that like other aspects of well-being, just like we have to work on our physical well-being in order to keep it maintained, the same is true of our spiritual well-being. Wherever we are on our spiritual journey, God wants to increase spiritual well-being for each of us. We need to kind of keep filling that spiritual tank in order to keep us in good spiritual health. Which I think means practicing some of the spiritual disciplines. And I guess many of us will know or be able to, we talked earlier on about some of the spiritual disciplines of being a follower of Jesus. But actually, just like physical well-being takes willpower and it takes time and effort and discipline, that's the same for our spiritual well-being as well. But often we don't like the word discipline, do we? It's got negative connotations. So actually, maybe it's helpful as we think about our spiritual well-being, maybe it's helpful to think about the fact that we are called to follow the example of Jesus's life. Because as we think about the spiritual disciplines, there are things that we see in Jesus's life. They were his practices, and he calls us for them to become our practices. And as we open ourselves up to the practices, to following Jesus and his example, actually what we're doing is connecting our spirit with God's spirit and enabling us to partner with God and his kingdom. Many of the spiritual practices aren't directly commanded by Jesus. But what Jesus does do is say to us, follow me. He gives us an invitation to follow him and then to learn from his example. So very simply, we can think about increasing our spiritual well-being by accepting that invitation of Jesus and following his example. So here are some of the things that we might reflect on. We were meeting on Wednesday, we were talking about different ways of doing sermons, and I said, I never really do a three-point sermon with three letters. Well, actually, I'm going to do this bit of it. It's about three points, and they all start with the same letter. So I haven't said I didn't do it on Wednesday. I've ended up doing it today. But I said, great, David, if we can have the first part of the slide. So the first thing is to think about the importance of silence and solitude if we're thinking about increasing spiritual well-being. You know, even as mature Christians, sometimes it's really hard for us to suss, or difficult for us to suss, when we are spiritually depleted and empty. You know, our bodies tell us, don't they? If we're hungry, we know. Our bodies tell us if we're thirsty, even if we're tired. But actually, our spirit doesn't kind of prompt us in the same way. Our spirit doesn't cry out or shout out when we're tired, spiritually tired and depleted. Which is why we need to spend time with God in silence and solitude, able to hear that inner voice of our spirit speaking to us. Time spent with God who knows us, being still, gives us the opportunity to discern and to ask, how is my relationship with God? How is it with my soul? Is it well with my soul? Which is something of what we see happening in this encounter between God and Elijah that Chris read earlier on. Because if you notice, God asked Elijah the same question twice. The question of, what are you doing here? Well, of course, God knew what Elijah was doing here. He'd asked him to make the journey. He knew what he was physically doing at Mount Horeb. But I wonder whether God was trying to prompt Elijah to ask him what he was doing in terms of wanting an encounter with God, of thinking a little bit of trying to prompt Elijah to ask the deeper questions of what's happening in my life, and then giving him the opportunity to share those things with God in this encounter. And I think that is a really helpful thing for us to do as well. You know, maybe there's a negative sense of silence and solitude. Maybe it frightens us a bit if we're used to lots of things going on. But actually, in solitude and silence, it gives us the opportunity of asking us the question, where are we? But actually, we're doing it in the company of God, who knows us, who knows where we are, but also knows us what's going to bring us spiritual vitality and well-being, the opportunity of connecting our spirit with God to hear from him. Because Elijah's experience powerfully reminds us that often God doesn't speak in this loudness, in the audible, occasionally he speaks audibly, but generally he speaks in the still, small voice, that gentle whisper. It's a fantastic example that we see with Elijah. You know, Elijah had encountered much of God's power, but God was teaching him here that he wanted to speak to him in the still, small voice. And I want to say that that is the way that God has spoken to billions of Christians down through the ages up until today. Many people would echo that that is how God usually speaks. But the difficulty is that we need to be still enough in order to be able to hear that voice speaking to us. Because when we retreat, when we have that sense of silence and solitude, what we're doing is we're taking away the noise of our culture and our lives and the busyness of our lives and the demands of our lives. We're even taking away the company of other people. Sometimes people are very good, and sometimes that's the way God speaks to us, through other people, but sometimes lots of people have got lots of views on things that we should be doing or not doing. But actually, I wonder whether this sense of silence and solitude is also trying to turn down the clutter of our own minds. Just trying to stop from all of those internal thoughts and worries and strivings. If you're anything like me, sometimes if something hasn't gone well, a conversation or a situation, we replay it in our minds again and again and again. Somebody talked about the clutter of our minds. That maybe that sense of solitude and silence is also trying to put that down in order that we might hear God's voice. That silence and solitude gives us an opportunity to discern what is really going on deep within us. And it also allows us to hear from God as well as listening, so that we get God's perspective and guidance on situations. Somebody said, in silence, we create space for God's activity and not our own. That's the practice as well that we see of Jesus over and over again. He has those busy days of teaching and of healing. No doubt he was exhausted. But what do we read? The next morning, or that same very night, he goes off up a mountain or somewhere to pray on his own in silence. You know, what might we have expected? After a busy day, we might have expected the next morning Jesus had a bit of a lie-in and then had brunch with his disciples. Actually, that's not what we read. We read that Jesus withdrew. And actually what we see is that once he withdraws, he comes back grounded in his purpose, regrounded in his purpose and his mission, and that sense of being one with the Father. If that was true, if Jesus needed to withdraw and pray and reground himself, surely that should be our need as well. And it seems to me that the busier that Jesus was, the more that he withdrew in order to pray, which is sometimes complete opposite to what I do. The more busy that I am, sometimes my quiet time in the morning is the first thing I need, that goes, because I need feel like I need to catch up with things and I need more time. But actually, it's the very thing that we should be doing more of the busier that we are. The opportunity to pray, to read a psalm, to take that sense of internal inventory. So I'd encourage each one of us to ask the question and to think, where is my quiet time and my quiet place where I connect with God? The second one, David, is Sabbath, of trying to reclaim the Sabbath. Sabbath word literally means stop. Well, know that it was rooted and designed by God, that when God created the world on the seventh day, he stopped and he looked and saw that all that he'd done was good. And so we're told that God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. If you go to the Ten Commandments, you might remember, if you know the Ten Commandments, that interestingly we're told to remember the Sabbath. That sense that is so easy to forget, that this day is blessed and holy. But it's also good to remind ourselves that in calling it and describing it as being holy, it's a reminder also that it's a day that is set apart from God. It's not just a day off, although it is a day of rest, but actually it's a day of worship as well, whatever that worship might look like for us. And I want to say that over the last 18 months, we should value that sense of being able to worship together more than ever. A day to rest and a day to worship. So again, I would encourage us to think a little bit about, what does Sabbath rest and worship look like for me? It would look like very different for all of us. We've got young children compared to if we're retired and all people in between. But for many of us, it will take that sense of intentionality. There'll be that sense of needing to plan ahead. Maybe even that sense of self-control, not to look at our emails or do other work, but to truly rest. Somebody said, people who keep the Sabbath live all 7 days differently because they've taken one day to stop and to rest and to worship. There's a story of an English traveller who landed in Africa at the height of British colonialism. He wanted to go into the jungle, and so he employed some locals to carry his supplies. Well, they walked for the first day, and it was an exhausting day, but they didn't sleep very well. And so the man got up, ready to go for the second day's journey. But no amount of cajoling or encouraging or pleading or bribing would make the locals start the journey for the second day. And when he asked them why, they simply said, "We're waiting for our souls to catch up with our bodies. We're waiting for our souls to catch up with our bodies." And somebody said, our rushing life, which is so many of us live, does for us what that first day did for those poor locals. The difference, they knew what they needed to restore life's balance, and they did it. Too often, we do not. The Sabbath is a gift for us to receive. It should be the best day of the week for us. It's us to think not just about silence and solitude, but what it means for us to reclaim our Sabbath. And last but not least, the third S is slowing down. Actually, many of the things that I read this week talked about the danger. Many Christian writers recognise, particularly today, that busyness is one of the kind of enemies of spiritual well-being. It's one of the most things that negatively impacts our relationship with God and that sense of being well spiritually. Somebody said the greatest danger isn't that we'll renounce our faith, but that we become so distracted and rushed and preoccupied that we settle for a mediocre version of it. I read a book in preparation which talked about the ruthless elimination of hurry in our lives. Actually, spiritual well-being is about slowing down. It's about grounding ourselves back into the present, so that we can live spiritually well, not just when we're sat in church on a Sunday morning, but every day of the week in our lives. Of slowing down to allow our bodies, our souls, to catch up with our bodies. And in order to do that, we need to try and cultivate patience by deliberately choosing to place ourselves in positions where we have to slow down. Those times when we simply have to wait rather than it being in forced wait. And so let me finish with some good examples how this week we might be able to encourage ourselves to slow down our overall pace of life. First of all, drive at the speed limit. Anybody drive at the speed limit? Although it did say, don't drive below the speed limit, because that's just annoying. Get into the slow lane. Show up 10 minutes early for an appointment. And then either to just chat to the people that you see around you or use the opportunity to pray, but don't use the opportunity to get your phone out. Get into the longest checkout when you're out shopping. Manage your phones rather than allowing your phones to manage us. Keep them off silent or off until after our morning quiet time. set specific times to look at emails, social media, and for TV, and then decide how long we would do those activities. Try single tasking rather than multitasking. And lastly, just walk slower and enjoy what's around you. Well, some of those are quite lighthearted, but maybe it would be good for each one of us to think about a list, or even just one thing that we might do to be able to slow down our pace of life and to allow our spirit to connect with God's spirit. I've always encouraged us throughout this series just to take one thing away. And so let's just be still for a moment. This opportunity, a good opportunity, in the silence, just to ask to connect our spirit with God's spirit and ask how he has been speaking to us individually through his word today. So let's just be still for a moment and allow God to speak into our lives.